Case number 13-1058, Lilly Pupin Systems, Inc. Petitioner v. Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration. Mr. Bandon for the petitioner, Ms. Kersebang for the respondent.
Good morning.
Your Honors, I have reserved 4 minutes for a rebuttal. May it please the Court, my name is Stephen Baden and I represent petitioners in this action, Lilly Pupin Systems, Incorporated. Federal law provides for a presumption in favor of the harmonization of American hazardous material regulations with their international counterparts, unless PHMSA can show and explain why the international standard is either unsafe or unnecessary. Here, PHMSA has refused to harmonize the regulations governing the ability of passengers to place certain fuel cell cartridges in their checked baggage with the international standard, despite the fact that never once in the administrative record did the agency explain why it felt that the international standard was either unsafe or unnecessary.
I understand your point about you may not agree the reasons were sufficient, but the agency did give some reasons.
Your Honor, at the very end of the process, after notice and comment had concluded and no one had an opportunity to respond, the agency did attempt to give some reasons in response to Lilliputian's administrative appeal. But
they gave some reasons. They didn't attempt to.
They did give some reasons, but the court is undoubtedly well aware, the letters IEC and ICAO appear nowhere in those reasons. So they do not discuss the standard. They do not explain what problems they have with the standard. We have no idea, for instance, Your Honor.
So let me just be clear. Your point is that the explanation that was given, one, came too late, and two, was insufficient and therefore arbitrary and capricious?
Both of those points, Your Honor, but they did not explain at all. They failed to answer the question that was before them. The question that was before them is whether the IEC ICAO standard is either unsafe or unnecessary.
Actually, the Secretary has to decide whether the standard is unnecessary or unsafe.
Yes.
And in denying the administrative consideration, the Secretary gave four reasons, or the agency gave four reasons.
Your Honor, those reasons were not given during the notice and comment period.
No, I understand that point.
But I will address them on the merits if that's what Your Honor is asking.
But you think the Secretary was obligated to address both, I'll get this wrong, but the IEC analysis as well as the panel analysis.
The UN body's analysis, ICAO.
Yeah.
Yes, Your Honor. Those four reasons. For instance, Your Honor, they cite passenger naivete. Passengers may not be aware of how to use the device and may use it wrongly. In the Dangerous Goods Panel report, the ICAO noted that they not only looked at if the fuel cell cartridge was used properly, the IEC and ICAO safety standard also addresses potential misuse by passengers. They took that into account. There was scientific data supporting that fuel cell cartridges that could go through the rigorous tests that the IEC and ICAO prescribed were safe for carriage on passenger airliners. The agency says nothing in response. In addition, Your Honor, in those reasons that the agency gives, the agency says that cartridges should be tested and demonstrate a certain level of safety. Your Honor, that is exactly what the IEC and ICAO standard is. It is a series of pressure testing, crushing testing, and unguarded drop.
What if they just disagree or balance the safety concerns differently?
Your Honor, if they disagree, then they need to explain in the record what their disagreement is.
Well, they are explaining why they think it's not safe, and they thus made a calculation different from the international.
Your Honor, what they have explained is that they believe that butane is a hazardous substance. Yet they allow butane on every passenger airliner in this country and passenger baggage in aerosol cans.
That's a different argument, right? But on the difference with the international standard, they just may strike the balance differently on safety.
Well, Your Honor, they don't tell us how they strike the balance. And for my client, which has worked on developing this product for 7 years, when it looks at the administrative record and it asks, assuming if this court were to send it back and the agency were to better explain its decision but maintain its decision as to not to allow it, if my client looks at this record What is it supposed to do in order to make its product better? Mm-hmm. Does PHMSA want it to be able to survive a 5-meter drop rather than a 1.8-meter drop? Well, they don't tell us, and they don't even hint at that.
A properly explained decision would presumably answer that question.
Yes, Your Honor. It
so
would at least.
It is the absence of an adequate explanation that's key.
That's right, Your Honor.
And you're certainly not asking us to. At least I don't think you're asking us to rule on the merits.
Absolutely not, Your Honor.
Okay. Because your request for vacatur suggests that you think we can be confident that we should unleash these onto the airlines.
No, Your Honor. I am a lawyer. Everyone in this room talking about this is a lawyer. And that's the problem. This is something that should have been discussed during the notice and comment period by scientists and safety experts, where the agency could state its position. Data and comments and scientific studies could be submitted to the record, and the agency could respond.
Yes. I'm sorry. As Judge Rogers says, there is explanation. It does seem that your argument's not so much explained, but is the substance of the explanation's not sufficient in your view.
Well, Your Honor, their substance does not go to the question at issue. They nowhere explain what problem they have with the international standard. Once again, if this court were to read, as I'm certain it has, the Federal Register from cover to cover, you would not know what the IEC ICAO standard is.
Do you think they have to respond to the international standard in so many words, or do they just have to say we're aware of the international standard, but here's how we strike the balance for safety reasons?
Well, Your Honor, I think
they're obviously aware of it. They say that.
Well, Your Honor, they don't cite to it. They don't cite the four tests that the pressure testing, the drop testing, the temperature extremes, and they don't say what problems they have. Is PHMSA worried that a fuel cell cartridge placed in a check bag will undergo greater temperature extremes than the international standard? These tests developed by the IEC and ICAO were specifically designed with carriage on passenger airlines in mind. As a matter of fact, Your Honor, under current PHMSA regulations, you can place fuel cell cartridges in the cargo section of a passenger airline. That is current PHMSA regulation.
Well, that leads me to a passage of the original decision that you cite, and which I don't, at least in part, I'm not sure what it means. This is the passage on page 87 of the Joint Appendix, and it's in the agency's treatment of allowing, quote, limited quantities. And it's quite a long sentence, but I think we're focusing on the whole sentence. They noted that the only difference between authorizing and not authorizing these materials as limited quantities is the required use of UN specification packaging, and that PHMSA offers no safety rationale for this exclusion, as the fuel cell cartridges themselves are subject to much more stringent construction testing and packaging requirements than similar articles, e.g. aerosols. We agree. So the comparison there is between, certainly the one thing that's being compared are the fuel cell cartridges with aerosols.
That's right? Correct, Your Honor.
But precisely which testing requirements are being compared?
Your Honor, the testing requirements to which they refer are the IEC ICAO standard. If you will look at Lilliputian's comment letter, but not only Lilliputian's, True Light, the Dangerous Goods Panel, they're all in the joint appendix. Originally, as Your Honor correctly notes, PHMSA also refused to harmonize the American regulation governing limited quantity cargo with its international counterpart. Lilliputian asserted the same arguments with regard to limited quantity cargo as it does with regard to fuel cell cartridges and passenger checked baggage. Namely, the IEC ICAO safety standard governs both, and that safety standard is sufficient to show that they are safe for carriage as limited quantity cargo. And the agency is.
I'm trying to get an answer to my question, which is, what are the requirements to which the aerosols are subject?
Your Honor, the requirements are not as strict. For example, under the IEC.
Do we have those requirements in the record?
They are in the Code of Federal Regulations, 49 CFR, Section 175.10, Your Honor, if you look it up. We cite to it at a different point in our brief. But for example, Your Honor, under the IEC ICAO standard, a fuel cell cartridge must be able to survive without any leakage whatsoever 2 times the pressure of the butane fuel in it.
Just hold on.
Sure.
Aerosols.
It's 1.5 times.
I see. Okay. So, and if we line these up, we can see the...
That's exactly correct, Your Honor. And as you correctly know, the agency has admitted that the standard for fuel cell cartridges is, in their own words, and I quote, much more stringent construction, testing, and packaging requirements, unquote, than for aerosol cans. And they nowhere in the record, nor even in their brief, do they address this inconsistency, despite multiple comments asking them to do so.
So, in your view, there is no way that a court could read the reasons that the agency gave as assuming these standards and the testing that has been done exist. Nevertheless, the agency is concerned about, for example, passenger inability to, they're not trained to, identify potential hazards, the aircraft fire detection and suppression systems don't actually prevent, and that the cumulative risk is of concern.
I just want to check on my time to make certain that I'm not into my rebuttal.
Please answer the question.
Yes, Your Honor. In response to your question, you mentioned, first of all, the ability of Halon 1211, which is the fire suppression system found in aircraft, to deal with any fire. The agency certainly does insinuate that Halon 1211 would not be able to take care of any fire, but I urge the court to read the agency's brief very carefully. They never once affirmatively state that it could not extinguish or suppress any fire involving butane, and there is a reason for that. It would be factually inaccurate. As the court is well aware, aerosol cans are allowed on airplanes. Those aerosol cans contain butane. They have been allowed on airplanes for 40 years. Over those 4 decades, the FAA has performed numerous tests, and they all show that Halon 1211 is effective against a fire involving butane.
What about the agency's cumulative concern?
With regard to cumulative risk, Your Honor, once again, aerosol cans have been allowed on airplanes for 40 years.
I know.
Over that time period, and despite the fact that we know the agency has been Googling the FAA's website, they have been unable to show a pattern of safety risk or even one incident involving an aerosol can. And a fuel cell cartridge, as the agency admits, is subject to an even stricter standard than aerosol cans. It is allowed to be flown on aircraft today, and it is placed in passenger's checked baggage on international flights today. And there is no indication in the DGP report, indeed the DGP report specifically cites to this evidence as one of the reasons it thinks that its standard is sufficient, that there is any problem with placing it in passenger baggage.
Why don't we hear from the agency?
May it please the court, I'm Dana Karasvong for the United States. The agency did not abuse its discretion in leaving in place this long-standing prohibition on fuel cells filled with flammable gas, which is regulated as a hazardous material. The agency explained that there were safety concerns, and it gave multiple reasons. Now, it specifically responded to the international regulations. It said that it was requested to revise to align with ICAO, and it gave its response.
Where
and
is that?
That is on 1104 in the first column.
1104, I'm right on 1104.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's 76 Fed Reg.
No, I'm right with you.
Oh, okay.
I'm at JA 136.
Right. So it's on the first column there in that first paragraph.
Right.
About three quarters of, or almost to the
where
bottom.
Where it says, although this is inconsistent with the ICAO technical instructions, we believe, that sentence?
So there's that sentence, and then if you go further down, maybe 10 lines.
Right.
It says, in their administrative appeals.
Right.
FCHEA and LSI requested that
but
PHMSA...
That's descriptive. That's not responsive.
Right. And then the next paragraph is titled PHMSA response.
Right.
And then the response, they explain they have multiple concerns with these, right? There are concerns about the uncertain effect of baggage handling on the durability of these products.
How is the baggage handling different for the cartridges from aerosol cans?
Well, Your Honor, this is new technology. We don't know how these are going to develop. We don't know what they're going to look like in a few years. And the agency
you could build that into the regulation.
Well, the agency said they had concerns about the durability of these products, and we don't know yet with these new products.
You have, as I understand it, these aerosol cans freely flowing onto the airlines, both in the checked baggage and in the carry-on baggage. And you allow the butane cartridges in the carry-on baggage, I haven't seen any place where you say, give any reason to suppose that there's any greater risk with the butane cartridges, particularly if they've been through the testing provided by the international agreement.
If I could just explain briefly how the aerosols work, right? The aerosol isn't full, that's not a container full of flammable gas. It's a container that's mostly full of hairspray or deodorant or something that just has some flammable gas propellant.
I'm not sure if I understood this correctly, but the contention seems to be that the actual number of milliliters of butane involved in the aerosol cans emitted is a multiple, in fact, fivefold. The aggregate amount of butane that would be carried on in the check.
I don't think that's correct. It depends on how much butane is actually in the aerosol container. So we allow up to 2 liters of aerosol, but that includes the hairspray and everything. I'm not actually sure how the math works out there. But the agency explained that it doesn't matter because what they're looking at is whether if we allow this on top of everything else that is already on the airplane.
That seems to me an astonishing privileging of history. I mean, and it was the agency seems to be telling us that if it has a whole bunch of risky things that it's allowing, then it can't allow a significantly less risky thing to be carried. And you'd think a rational agency that was really worried about the previous thing, the things that it had previously permitted, would take some steps to weed out ones that it regarded as risky. But apparently the agency sees no material risk in the aerosol cans. So the cumulative argument doesn't really get me very far. I don't think the agency's allusion to cumulative risk is even put in a context of a comparison with the aerosol cans.
Well, that was in response to comments about the aerosol cans. So I think if you look back and forth.
I understand that they made a comment inviting the comparison, but the agency never accepted the invitation.
Well, I think they did. I think that was the response.
Show me the language.
Well, it says in its list of reasons, which is under the title FINSA's response to their comments, one of those is cumulative risk.
I see that. Where's the allusion to aerosol cans?
Well, I think that if you look at all of this in context, that's what the agency was saying. But in terms of
implying the now, I guess, 40 years old administrative law doctrine, and we expect agencies to respond to serious contentions against their outcome, I don't think we've ever said that the agency could just say, well, that without referring to the particular point being made, to say, well, cumulative risk. We've never seen anything remotely like that, much less see it getting blessed by this court.
This was a response to the agency's, comment about aerosols.
That was about 10 pages. And the agency never hooks cumulative risk to anything. It's assuming arguendo that it would do any good to respond as a response to the aerosol can issue.
So, what the agency is saying here is if we're going, we have to look at what this is on top of everything else, not just aerosol cans, but everything that is already on the airplane.
You accept my hypo, but if the agency sees has allowed 100 things, each of which has a risk of 10, and then along comes an application for 101st thing, which has a risk of 1, it's rational for the agency to veto the 101st because of all the things which it has perhaps foolishly allowed in the past.
So I don't want to concede that this is that 101st thing with a much lower risk, but there is a procedure to ask the agency to reconsider something that it already allows on the plane. Nobody has invoked that procedure here.
I don't think the petitioners here want to eliminate the aerosol cans. They're asking that a logical rule of decision or exercise discretion be applied to their application.
In other words, even if the agency had said, look, the 101st thing may be less risky, but for the following reasons, we have decided not to allow it, and given some explanation, like the problem of trying to enforce this, given that passengers for the last 30 years have been bringing on aerosol cans or something like that. But there doesn't seem to be anything like that.
Well, nobody has asked us, again, to roll back the aerosol regulation. The agency did
no,
give
but
multiple
that's, I'm responding to your point that they don't have to. And they could say, but we're still not going to allow it, but they have to tell us why.
Well, and I think they did that here. They gave multiple reasons. They said they were concerned about the baggage handling. They talked about the fact that this is new, developing technology. They said they're concerned about critical safety requirements, like notice and packaging not applying to these, so the people handling these bags don't necessarily know they have flammable gas. They said they're concerned about fire suppression.
Do you think that passengers checking aerosol cans have any idea that those have flammable gas?
Surely not.
That's a fantastic proposition.
But certainly it's hard for the agency to reverse course. Once people get used to carrying something on
right, it's a political. It's yes. This whole thing is a political problem. You couldn't get rid of the aerosol thing without causing just a complete political meltdown. So, but you're not going to put that in the explanation here either. I understand that.
But we
want to be realistic. That's what's going on.
But we do regulate against this backdrop of the existing regulations, as Your Honor said. And they also explained that there is concern about the fire suppression system's ability to handle these, that those fire suppression systems don't completely extinguish fires, so they're not going to prevent a fire.
Actually, I had a question which I never managed to get in for your opposing counsel, and that is, I honestly don't understand how the fire suppression systems would work at all for stuff in the hold of the airplane.
So it's actually a slightly different fire suppression system than the one that was used in the test, which was basically a fire extinguisher. The cargo holds of airplanes have this built-in automated system where they detect a fire and then they release this fire-suppressing gas. Oh. It doesn't put the fire all the way out. So if the
that's encouraging.
the goal is to provide time to land the plane, but if there's something that is flammable and explosive that can melt and the Lilliputian cells melt in 45 seconds, that fire may not go all the way out, may ignite one of these other things and cause an explosion. So that was a concern that the agency mentioned. They did assume some knowledge about how the fire suppression system works because that's their bread and butter here.
Do you think if the agency allows something unsafe, it's required to allow other similarly situated unsafe materials?
No, Your Honor, I don't. That would be contrary to the agency's.
I mean, but it would be arbitrary and capricious, right? That's the problem I think you're in here, which is there's something that, I know you can't say this, but that is not ideal that's allowed on airplanes, and there's something similarly situated that's tough to distinguish.
Well, I don't think it's similarly situated, right? Because aerosols are a known quantity. They've been around for a long time. These fuel cells are brand new technology.
But as Judge Williams says, no one has any idea. I mean, not no one, but very few people probably have an idea about the dangers with the aerosol cans, right?
And the one of the
you
problems
with that,
these fuel
right?
cells...
Or at least you don't know
I
otherwise.
Don't, I don't know the answer yeah. to that. But one of the problems with these fuel cells is that this is brand new technology. We don't know how these are going to develop, how they're going to change over time. We don't know what they're going to look
but
like by the time...
But how does that change the risk? If people don't know what's going on with aerosol cans, I guess I'm missing what the difference is if people don't know with the aerosols what it, why it matters that they don't know about the fuel cells.
Well, the agency doesn't want to approve something that may change over time. It's hard to roll back. It could be quite risky. So here they say, you know, we are willing to look, they say this in the Federal Register, we're willing to look at designs on a case-by-case basis once there's more of a history and we can see whether these are safe.
How much history was there on the aerosol cans in 1972?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
How much history was there on the aerosol cans in 1972?
You know, this is another situation where the technology unfortunately changed. In 1972, aerosols were, I don't think this is in the record, but aerosols were powered with CFCs, and then because of environmental concerns, people started looking for other ways to power their aerosols. So
what happened was the aerosols got approved with one chemical, and then seamlessly the approval switched on to a whole new chemical without any outrage or action by FMSA.
Well, the aerosol regulation is very broadly worded, and it's
so
about...
Maybe the lesson is not to word these permissions very broadly.
Well, and the agency has said that it will look on a case-by-case basis at specific things in the future when there's a proven track record for those things. So I think the agency has taken that
precedent. How can there be a track record if they're never allowed on? I don't understand.
Well, we'll see. First of all, we're not shutting down this new technology. It is allowed in the carry-on, and I'd be happy to talk about why that's different. It's also, we allow them to be shipped where there's packaging and notification requirements.
Why don't you explain on the carry-on versus checked why that's different?
Certainly, Your Honor. The agency explained that it was concerned with the baggage handling, the uncertain effects of baggage handling, and you just don't throw around your own bag the way that the baggage handlers might throw it around.
But is there any evidence the baggage handlers throw the baggage with the ferocity involved in the international testing regime? That sounded pretty tough to me. I mean, I share your concern about the baggage handlers.
Your Honor, I don't think that we have details about what exactly the baggage handlers are doing to the bags, but the agency also explained that in addition to the uncertain effects of baggage handling and the durability of these new products over time, the fire suppression systems, as we discussed, since they don't completely put the fire out, no matter how good your baggage handling is, one of these things could melt in an existing fire and lead to a catastrophic explosion.
So let me understand,
there are a number of things.
Just, excuse me, piggybacking on Judge Williams' point about maybe grant these approvals so broadly. Is that what the agency had in mind when it said, come to us with a particular design, and we will then determine whether for that design we will allow the cells in the baggage?
Yes, that's part of it, and part of it is this concern about the development of the technology and wanting to see a track record.
But I just want to understand precisely what the agency had in mind there. In other words, it's saying, to use Judge Williams' hypothetical, we're at the 101 tipping point, and we're not going to allow this broadly. We're going to do it on a design-by-design basis. So when the international group was testing, was it limited by design?
No, Your Honor. There was discussion before ICAO, that international body, that maybe there should be differences based on the particular fuel cell. And the international body didn't go that way. But we certainly did consider what the international body did. There was also some mention that we didn't...
So I just need to be clear. So is it your view then that the international body, what it said is we don't care about the design, any fuel cell can be put in your baggage?
So the Yes, the international body made a number of assumptions, which PHMSA explains in the Federal Register were incorrect. Right? They assumed that this IEC testing was enough. We didn't ignore the IEC testing. It's expressly incorporated in this very regulation. But we said that for flammable gas that creates this really hot explosive fire, it wasn't enough. PHMSA explained had concerns about handling, durability, and the fire suppression systems. Then ICAO also talked about the fact that there's no actuation in the cargo, at least if people are following all the rules. And PHMSA explained, look, we still have fires in cargo. Our fire suppression system doesn't prevent fire, so there's still the risk of a spark getting in there. So PHMSA explained what was wrong with that ICAO reasoning and why those IEC standards, which it did certainly not ignore, they're in the regulation, were not enough for this particular very, very risky product.
And when you say cumulative risk, or when the agency says cumulative risk, is that cumulative on an individual flight?
So when we assess risk for any particular thing going wrong, the agency looks at a very, very low level of risk because it looks then at, you know, if we have a lot of flights every day over years, the chance of something that goes wrong, and that one in a billion chance, you know, may eventually pop up when we have a lot of flights over time.
So it's not on an individual flight having aerosol plus this becomes too risky. It's just this is dangerous and we're going to draw the line here.
So it's both that this is dangerous and we're going to draw the line, and we're going to look at what happens with this combined with everything else that we already have on the plane. So I think that both factors play into the decision.
Okay.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions, I ask the court to deny the petition.
Thank you.
Your Honors had several questions about the dichotomy that the agency drew between flammable gases and flammable liquids, which they just alluded to. I would direct the court to page 5 of the agency's brief, where it lays out that dichotomy. That dichotomy is based on a foundation of falsity. Your Honors, if you will look, they lay out two sentences there, which they say are direct quotes from the DGP report that address the question of fuel cell cartridges and checked baggage. As the agency renders it, the first quote that they have says, many were wary of permitting fuel cell cartridges containing substances of other classes. Although there is not any ellipsis there, if the court will go back and check the joint appendix citation, you'll see that sentence has been truncated. And what the agency does not include is what the sentence concludes with.
And where in the joint appendix?
Joint appendix page 5, Your Honor.
Joint appendix page 5 and also red brief page 5?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, and it's the
many were wary of permitting fuel cell cartridges containing substances of other classes. And what PHMSA does not include is what the sentence concludes with.
Let me just be clear.
Yes,
all
Your
right,
Honor.
I'm on JA5.
Yes, Your Honor. It is at the section at the bottom of that page which deals with the ICAO standard governing the carriage of fuel cell cartridges and passengers' check bags.
So that's 2.94.
That is, Your Honor, 2.943. 2.9.4.3.
Thank you.
They begin with, many were wary of permitting fuel cell cartridges containing substances of other classes. What they leave out is what comes afterward, particularly those containing water reactive substances. Your Honor, water reactive substances is a completely different set of fuel cell cartridges.
It says particularly those. It doesn't say only those.
Well, that's correct, Your Honor, but if you will read that entire section, you will not see the word flammable gas appear. That is why they had to draw in the second sentence that comes afterward in their brief. That sentence says, some felt further consideration was needed with respect to fuel cell cartridges containing flammable gases. But, Your Honor, that sentence comes from the next page of the Joint Appendix, Joint Appendix page 6. And if the court will check, it will see that entire section that they have drawn it from does not deal with the regulation at issue before this court. It instead deals with a completely separate regulation involving limited quantity cargo. And as has already been mentioned before, not only did ICAO reject any concerns regarding flammable gases with limited quantity cargo, but so did PHMSA. I would suggest to this court that if the agency, that agencies that can adequately explain their regulations.
Well, this is just the brief talking about what the, and it concludes the paragraph with, in the end. I mean, this is not the agency's explanation. I don't know.
Well, Your Honor, it is their best attempt at an explanation, and it's where they draw the dichotomy this court was looking at.
I see.
Ultimately, the reason that this court has so many questions is that they were not answered in the administrative record. This should be vacated or remanded back to the agency so that we can have this discussion where it belongs.
What do you think if the agency's allowed something unsafe? Is it required to allow other similarly situated unsafe materials?
Your Honor, it's our position that neither aerosol cans nor this fuel cell cartridge are unsafe.
What if aerosol cans are unsafe?
Honor, there's 40 years worth of evidence that shows otherwise.
Okay, but what about the question?
Your Honor, if the agency has made a mistake with regard to allowing something on board an aircraft, the solution is to correct that mistake. It is not to compound that mistake by prohibiting something else that is subject to a much more strict construction, testing, and packaging
regime. So your answer is yes, I think.
To your question, our product should not be penalized if the agency has made a mistake in the past.
Okay. Take that as
a
yes.
Anything further?
Unless the court has any further questions, that is all, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.